Gosh, it's great to have him here in person because it's been a while. David Murata is the president of Murata Wealth Management. He's online at muratahonmoney.com. And today's topic, and it's so important, 7 elder abuse scams and how to protect yourself, and I would imagine by extension your loved ones. David, welcome back. It's great to have you with us today.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever meant it more, but thank you so much for having me.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so elder abuse. I think a lot of people are unclear, and they might hear this and think, like, maybe like I thought when I first heard the term, like someone's hitting somebody.
Yeah, and that's certainly a component of elder abuse, but we really mean elder abuse financial scams. Mm. And, you know, I said elder abuse in the article, and that's sort of the Elder Abuse Awareness Day and all of that. But really, you know, I almost think of it more as youth abuse, because I succumbed to a lot of these scams when I was young and didn't know better, mm-hmm. you know, back in, you know, 21, 22 years old than I did as an elder. And it says in the article that just 4% of elders succumb to something like this. Mm-hmm. But the fact that I've succumbed to these in my youth make me think over a lifetime, you're liable to succumb to some of these at least and get scammed out of some of your money. And just trying to keep that number small is better than not having any of these safeguards in place.
Yeah. So we lived through a little bit of this as we found out my late mother-in-law, who's been gone for many years. But there was a family member who was totally taking advantage of her while we were living here. This family member was living in proximity and just cashing in on credit cards and mail order and all sorts of stuff. We didn't find out about it till later, but it was embarrassing, I think, for my mother-in-law to even mention that this was going on. I'd imagine there's a component of this, which is like people don't even want to talk about it because it is embarrassing.
It's terribly embarrassing, you know, especially, you know, as a financial advisor to have fallen prey to financial scams. Mm-hmm. I'm just embarrassed by that fact. Yeah. When I was 21, I was sold an annuity. And it's only been last year that I've actually been able to cash that annuity in, because I'd taken all the money out that could be taken out, and there was about $18,000 left, and the surrender charge was about $18,000.
Wow.
So they would surrender 100% of it. And then when I finally got to be 59 and a half and the money was mine and I knew I could take it, I called in and they said, no, you can't just take it. You have to take it over a 5-year payout period. So, you know, until I'm 64 and a half, I actually won't have gotten all of my money yet. So to have all of my money locked up between, you know, age 21 and age 64 and a half, simply because I fell prey to this person who didn't tell me what I was doing, that's just embarrassing. It's an embarrassing fact of the truth. And that's not even a scam. That was just legal.
Mm-hmm.
So I won't want to say it's illegal, but, you know, none of the disclosures were in place that needed to be in place, according to that.
That's what I was going to ask you. Is this by and large a problem of a lack of regulation or notification? Or what percentage of this is just that people are being lazy?
Well, I would say that people are just very good. The scammers that are out there are just very good at what they do. Mm-hmm. And they're playing the long game, but you can scam a number of people before lunch and you can make a good living that mm-hmm. way. So that's the unfortunate aspect of it, is that these calls just work. You know, mm-hmm. it's robocalls on the front end, and they only get to you if they actually press a button that says they want to talk to you. And then you can tell immediately whether or not they're a viable mark or not. And so if they're not a viable mark, you just swear at them and hang up on them. And that's the way it works. So, you know, these financial scams are very ubiquitous. They're just everywhere. And we need some safeguards against them.
Let's go to some of the scams. I bet they will sound familiar. I was familiar with most of these. But let's start off with the computer virus scam.
Yeah, so, you know, on this aspect, a scammer is pretending to be a computer tech. Usually it's some pop-up that you go to or some website that mm-hmm. says, you know, big flashing, your computer may be infected, and, you know, with this small charge, then we will take the infection off. In truth, the download that you take is going to infect your computer, you know, and so, or someone, if you actually ask for help, someone will sell you some software. Mm-hmm. The solution to this is, one, never trust a website pop-up mm-hmm. because legitimate companies don't sell their wares by pop-up.
Right.
And if they do, if they're trying to sell a ware by pop-up, you know it's junk anyway. Mm-hmm. So you should just not have it. But the solution is for a senior is to have someone that they can trust who can access their computer and help them. Mm-hmm. So if they have, you know, my father's in a retirement community, and they have someone on staff who does computer support.
Right.
So if they need anything, they just go to their computer support person, and he just runs around solving problems. And you know, that's a legitimate need in the senior community, because if you're on your computer and you run into a problem, you need to have somebody that you know you can call. And if you don't have someone you know you can call, then that's the issue where you're looking for some kind of a pop-up or something to solve that. So I think just never letting anyone have access to your computer other than the one person that you will trust is the right way to do it. And unfortunately, you know, people trust a family member who will only visit, you know, once a month or once a quarter. You know, my father used to be this way, and when I would come visit, he would have a list of computer issues that he needed me to solve. And I would just do the entire weekend, you know, I was there, I would just be solving computer issues. But in truth, you know, if you don't have somebody that you trust like that, you need to have some computer tech that you can support that will do that.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned the pop-ups. I actually have received calls in the house from people, and I generally don't answer the phone, but claiming to be Microsoft. Now, first of all, I don't use any Microsoft products in the house, so I knew that was a phony right off, but a very heavy foreign accent, maybe a Chinese accent, trying to convince me that my Windows computer was infected and to send them all this money. And I kind of dangled them out a little bit because I wanted to see what they would say.
Yeah.
But these come by telephone as well. And I would imagine, you know, again, if somebody's unfamiliar, it would be easy to be taken in. The next one is the IRS or Social Security, which again, seem to be targeting people in a certain bracket.
Yeah, and the IRS or Social Security scam, you know, they'll call and they'll say, your Social Security number has been used to commit fraud, your IRS, there's liens against you, and we can put out a warrant for your arrest. There's all these threatening stuff that they'll do. And we wish that companies would call us. We wish that the IRS would call us. We wish that Social Security would call us when there's a problem. They don't. None of those companies actually have robocalling as a method, or even calling as a method. You know, if you have something that's wrong with your Social Security number or your tax payments, they will send you a letter, yes, but they will not call you. That just won't happen. And these fraudsters won't send out a whole bunch of letters for the most part. For the most part, when I get a letter, even if it looks fraudulent, it's actually probably true, just because that's the way things work. But they just won't send out a letter. Now, maybe in the future, they'll get sophisticated and they'll send out a letter. So they call those paper audits, according to the IRS, and I can kind of recognize a paper audit. If you do get a letter like that, you should just call the number of record rather than the number that's on your form. And then you should create your own Social Security account, simply because if you don't, someone else will. But even those are not all that secure. And again, no one will ever call you. The defense is just to recognize no one will help you solve this problem, and no one will call you, and no one will do anything about it. So that's the solution, is you're on your own, and you need to have people that you can trust to do stuff like that.
The next one's very interesting, and I've also encountered this one. It's the relative in trouble scam. Now, tell us about this.
Yeah, so I've had clients who've fallen prey to this, or at least would have fallen prey had we not been their advisor. You know, I had a client call me and she said, I need $35,000 and I need it this afternoon. And I'm thinking, okay, so getting it to you this afternoon is difficult because it takes a little bit of time to transfer it. But I said, what is it for? I can't tell you. You know, I just need to know, has someone been kidnapped? No, I can't tell you. And then I finally find out that someone has called and said that their grandson has been arrested and they need it for bail money, and there's a gag order on it, and all these sort of things that are all red flags to me. And I said, I'm pretty sure that you're being scammed. Do you mind if I do a little research? And I did research and said, you know, there is no attorney by that name in that state. Wouldn't he be in school at this time? And things like that. And finally said, well, can I just call your daughter to see if your grandson is okay? And I called the daughter. And the daughter fortunately answered the phone because she saw it was for me. And she thought, that's kind of weird that my mother's financial advisor is calling me.
Right.
And I explained to her, and then everything was okay. But they're very good at imitating a grandson or a granddaughter, and they're always telling a sob story, and they always have things that you should tell your financial advisor. But it was very upsetting for my client, you know, just because they're just in tears because they love their grandson and they want to do whatever their grandson would you know, needs. But the truth of the matter is, no one ever needs money to be wired. That is just a truth. If you're buying a car or you're buying a house, they will ask that the money be wired. And even there are ways around wiring money. I just sort of have a rule. I won't wire money because once you've wired money, you can't get it back. And as the financial advisor on clients, I'm required to sign a piece of paper for every money transfer. I have to sign a piece of paper that says, I have talked to the client. I know it's the client who's requesting it because you can't, even Schwab can't get it back. Mm-hmm. They just have to send it out. And it's kind of a one-way sent into the ether, and then you just hope it arrives okay. So my rule is I just will never wire money because wiring money is the hardest thing to get back. If you put it on a credit card, it's a much easier to get it back. You can turn it over, call it, and dispute the charge. But if you wire it, it's kind of lost forever. And we have an article on our website on how you can try to get wired money back, but it's also very difficult.
And I just want to say before we go to the break that I've seen a couple emails coming from people I know about that whole relative in trouble thing. And the ones that I saw were very convincingly written. A lot of times these things are easy to see because the grammar's bad, the punctuation's bad, but these ones looked real. And they were coming from friends who apparently had a virus come right into their email box and send out to their whole list of people, hey, my grandson's in trouble, can you help me out?
Yeah.
You know, and then so now we're drawn into the scam that someone else is the target of.
My father had one, and they had an email that was very close to his email. His email had clearly had been hacked. They had an email that was very close to his email that said he'd been mugged in Barcelona, Spain. Mm-hmm. For my father, that's actually a legitimate thing to worry about because we used to tease that he was dating Carmen Sandiego because he was such a world traveler.
Yeah.
And I got emails from all different family members. Yeah. Is your dad okay? He says, yes, he's fine. He's not in Barcelona and he didn't get mugged.
That was good news. The Shilling Show will be back on the other side. If you have experiences, comments, or questions regarding these scams, we'd love to hear from you. 977-1070. We'll continue with David Murata in just a moment. All right, heading into the final segment of the show for today. David Murata is our guest. He's online at muratahonmoney.com. We're talking about elder abuse scams and how to protect yourself. Here's another one that hit a very dear friend of mine, and he didn't want to talk about it. It was a sweetheart scam. He wanted to borrow money, and oh my goodness, it's just tragic. And it was heartbreaking, literally and figuratively as well, to watch him go through this. Tell us about it.
The sweetheart scam, or sometimes the family in need or the hard luck story or something like that, is someone will spend a significant amount of time developing a relationship. And sometimes this is over email, and you might think that that's a little bit of a red flag. Sometimes these can be in person. And the typical one is a family moves into a church, and churches have big hearts, and they're helping them out with support and giving them toys and all kinds of stuff like that. And then they just move away. Mm. Or they'll do military families, another set of group that has a big heart. They'll scam them that way. And you would think that they would just not spend so much time cultivating this relationship, except that they probably have it all scripted and it's, you know, they can send out their various stories and people will fall for it. And they may start by asking them to receive goods at their house and then ship them on to someone else. That's a common philosophy. Hey, I'm moving. Can you receive this good and then ship it on to me? That usually means that they're involved in some kind of a shipping Amazon fraud, or else they'll just receive money, and that will be another aspect. They're using these people as mules to move goods, you know. But it's kind of heartbreaking because good people have big hearts,
yeah,
and you kind of don't want to be a person who has a little heart or who doesn't trust people, and you're trying to help people in need. But I've worked for a lifetime trying to help people in financial need. And there's a few lessons I've learned associated with this. And that is, you can't help people live within their means if you try to supplement their means.
That's a good point. I wish the federal government and the state government were listening in as well.
Yeah. And so, you know, if people are in credit card debt, I will say, well, the out for that, if you really get in trouble, is bankruptcy, you know, and then people say, well, I have this other kind of debt that I need. And there's always an answer other than just trying to give them money.
Yeah.
You know, and I tried to help one family, or I started down the path of helping one family. And then I was warned actually by a friend, and we listed everyone that they owed money to. And I found out they owed over $1 million.
That's scary.
And they thought they were going to make it big. I think they were fooling themselves for the most part, but they thought they were going to make it big on the next multi-level marketing deal or the next response. If they just had a 0.5% response, then they would do okay on their business venture. And they just needed money to send out this thing. And in truth, what they needed to do was file bankruptcy. And they finally did. After, you know, they actually moved out of the area. And about 5 or 6 years later, got all these notices about the way they were declaring bankruptcy.
We've got just a couple minutes left, and I want to get to some of the general protections. And you have the full article up online at maradaonmoney.com so people can see it there. But let's go to some suggestions that we have for people to protect themselves.
Yes. Yeah, so I recommend that if you have a family member that you're worried about, that you actually go through scenarios of role-playing in which you call them and they respond. And you can start out with the most outrageous, you know, one you want. Mm-hmm. Hello, I'm a Nigerian prince, and I would like, you know, I need to move $2 million out of the country, and for that, I will give you $500,000. You know, and you can just start with stuff like that.
Yeah.
But you can get them sort of acclimated to the idea that people are out there trying to scam them. The other thing is I would buy them a smartphone and have it only answer for numbers that are in their contacts.
Uh-huh.
And that's probably the easiest because a lot of these seniors have a landline and landlines just ring. But my phone, you know, I have a problem that my phone, if you try to call my phone, it will just go straight to voicemail because it doesn't know who's calling. And it's set to not only answer for the people who are in my contacts, and I probably have, you know, 20 people in my contacts.
Right.
So, you know, if you need to reach me, you actually need to call the office and go through a receptionist. And then you have a different problem. Mm-hmm. So that would be another thing I would do. So in addition to rehearsing the various scams, I would teach them to never send money no matter what someone says. Mm-hmm. And anyone who's just doing work in the neighborhood is usually not the best work that can be done. So that's another rule I have.
Yeah, we get those people come to the door all the time. They want to trim some limbs or something like that.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, and if you don't trim your limbs, you know, all these dire consequences are going to happen when in fact you can either take it or leave it. I had someone who came and repaired my driveway and they did an absolutely terrible job. Mm-hmm. And I kind of felt the obligation to pay them anyway because, you know, here they were, they had done their thing and they were still asking for the same amount of money. That's another thing. You should always get in writing what people are going to do when they're doing work and you should get a bid. And people who won't do that just don't do a very good job. Some people are not even licensed to do the work that they're suggesting they can do around you. So I now have the idea that if you have to advertise it, it's not very good. So if you have to come around to try to sell your services, I just won't deal with anyone on that basis. And if you're advertising to me, then I won't deal on anyone with that basis. And when I want to buy something, I want to go do the research to how to buy it. It's one of the ways of just getting the right amount of money, getting the best use for your money.
We've got one more minute. I do want to talk about credit freeze, which has been simplified a lot, at least getting out of the freeze and getting back into it, I think is a lot easier than it used to be.
It has. And so doing a credit freeze is very easy. You go on and you freeze your credit. And then when you want credit, you go on and you release it and then you can freeze it again. You can let it automatically shut down after 2 weeks or 1 week or whatever you want. I've had good luck with that, and that has reduced the marketing that comes to me. I just applied for another credit card because it had certain rewards I wanted, and that credit card, I released it for 2 weeks, and it shut down again, and that was easy to do. And then the first thing you do when you get a credit card, of course, is you turn it over, and you call the number, and you say, take me off of all the possible distribution and marketing that you can do. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they've already kicked off a whole bunch of marketing that's going to come to you anyway. But they'll say, yeah, in 3 weeks there or in 3 months, that'll all shut down and then you'll be okay.
All right. There's so much more to this. And David's got it all online. 7 elder abuse scams and how to protect yourself. It's online at maradaonmoney.com. David, so great to have you back here in studio with us. And thank you, as always, for these helpful tips.
It's great to be here. And it's wonderful to be back after a year.